From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. So, Annette, sometime when I was in college, freshman year, somebody played me this Bob Dylan song. Pistol shots ring out in a barroom night. It tells the story of Reuben Hurricane Carter. He's a famous boxer. In the 60s, he was convicted, along with another black man, of murdering three white people in a bar in Paterson, New Jersey. Maybe you know the song. It's called Hurricane.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with the song. Here comes the story of the hurricane.
The man the authorities came to blame. And maybe you're also familiar with the Oscar-nominated movie based on the story.
I actually saw the movie with Denzel Washington playing Hurricane, yes.
Did you see it in the theater?
I did.
My job was to take all the hatred and skill that I could muster and send a man to his destruction. And I did that.
Anyway, I wasn't really a Dylan fan, but I liked the song and I thought I knew the story pretty well. But just this year, a podcast came out that really changed my view of the story. And it came from these two BBC journalists who uncovered 40 hours of previously unheard recordings from Reuben Carter, who died back in 2014.
Yeah, Shai, you know, I thought I knew the story too, having seen the film. But the podcast uncovered all this new information. So why don't we know exactly what happened that night in Paterson? And what do we make of the complicated man at the center of the story?
Today on The Why, re-entering the storm.
There we go.
Hello?
Hi, it's Steve here in England.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you. How are you?
Steve Crossman is host and producer of the podcast The Hurricane Tapes. At the time we spoke with him last week, he and his co-producer, Joel Hammer, were deep in conversations with a BBC lawyer about whose name they could specifically say on the podcast.
We are so completely drowning in
I understand.
In lawyers. In fact, our lawyer is quite literally named Mr. Law.
We should also note, all of the audio you'll hear in this episode is from the Hurricane Tapes podcast.
But I'll just jump into it by saying I want to acknowledge that Annette and I, we are two reporters in Philadelphia. We're a little more than an hour from Paterson, New Jersey, and we're talking to a reporter in the UK who has broken big parts of this story. I just want to acknowledge that and give you some kudos for that.
Cool. I love a bit of kudos. What do you say? Kudos?
Kudos, yeah. That's kudos. An American thing, I guess.
We say kudos, but okay. We can go with whatever.
We started off by asking Steve if he could briefly sum up this notoriously complicated story.
No. I'm sure I can manage it. Reuben Carter.
I've been in prison all my life.
And John Artis.
My birthday's October the 15th.
Were at a night spot on June 16th, 1966. It's actually called The Night Spot in Paterson, New Jersey.
I figured it's time for me to go to this club, The Night Spot, which was the real happening spot, you know, and have some fun.
And they were there around about 2:15, 2:20 in the morning. We know that to be a fact. The murders happened about a mile away at 2:30.
A triple murder, which could have been called a massacre, occurred in Paterson, New Jersey.
Three people were killed, four people shot in total. One man survived the shootings. And John Artis and Reuben Carter were in a car, again, very near the murder scene, 10 minutes later, when they were first stopped by the police.
The officer, one came up on my side, on the driver's side, and the other guy stood sort of like on the passenger side, but near the rear door. That's when the officer looked in. He said, "Oh, hey, champ, I didn't see you in there." So Reuben said, "Yeah." He said, well, what are you stopping us for?" He said, well, we're looking for two Negroes. So Reuben said,
"Will any two Negroes do?"
Carter and Artis were released, but they were later picked up by the police.
They were put on trial for these crimes. They were arrested until 4 months later. A key eyewitness played a big part in their conviction, a man named Alfred Bellow.
They were there. Oh, they were directly involved. No doubt about that. They weren't playing jacks on the corner.
And he was a man who only came forward after a $10,000 reward was offered. And he played a huge part in their conviction, which happened in 1967.
What followed was a nearly two-decade legal odyssey. Reuben and John's convictions were overturned in 1976, but they were tried again and again got convicted.
And then to wrap up that part of the story, John was paroled in 1981, and Reuben and therefore John's convictions were overturned in 1985.
The verdict was based upon race rather than reason and concealment rather than disclosure.
You guys are sports writers. Why did you decide to examine this case?
When I started this, which was 2017, it was exactly 50 years since Reuben and John were first convicted. So I knew the Bob Dylan song because I'm a fan of Dylan. I've seen the film many, many times, and I was probably watching it again for no apparent reason in 2017 and thought, huh, it's been 50 years. And it occurred to me that very little has been done on what happened to Reuben Carter after these convictions. And having done a little bit of research, it was clear that he did a lot of work with the wrongfully convicted. And it became clear that I was going to have the opportunity, if I wanted it, to speak to some of the people he helped free. And I thought, you know, what a nice kind of 50th anniversary of the crimes, our documentary, which is particularly pertinent because of everything that's happening in America at the moment. You know, Reuben was always somebody who talked about the kind of curse of being a black athlete, in that he felt people basically were saying to black athletes, unlike their white counterparts, you know, you're effectively being told you should just be grateful to being paid what you're being paid.
That's what most black athletes and celebrities and movie stars understand. If they've made it, they got to leave those people alone. Because if they open their mouths, you see, there's no middle ground for black people in the United States. Either you're rich or you're poor. It's simple as that.
And when you think about Colin Kaepernick, when you think about Black Lives Matter, when you think about Charlottesville, I wondered if the case was that not much has changed. So that is what I set out to investigate, and then stuff just happened.
So, Steve, we know that Reuben was arrested for murder and eventually released. But what we don't know and what isn't in the public sphere is any mention of who may have actually committed those crimes. But you have some theories, including one about a man named Eddie Rawls.
Yeah, we do. Eddie Rawls, crucially, is the stepson of a man who was murdered, a black man who was murdered earlier the same night in Patterson as the murders at the Lafayette Bar and Grill for which Reuben and John were convicted. And the theory is, and I think there's a lot of legs in this theory, that the murders that happened at the Lafayette Bar and Grill were revenge for what happened at this bar.
I saw him after they had stopped Reuben and I and taken us to police headquarters.
This is John Artis.
He was out in the hallway of the interrogation room ranting and raving about the police better do something, because if you don't do something, I'm going to do something.
And Eddie Rawls was a good friend of Reuben Carter, and Eddie Rawls worked at the Night Spot, which is the bar that Reuben and John were on the night of the murders. He's the only person in this whole story with a proper motive, and we've also learned a lot about him through the various reports that we found. We've learned that he was a very violent man.
Eddie Rawls, it was like he was angry at the world.
We've learned that he lied about his alibi for the night of the murders. And the final piece of evidence, of course, or final piece of information, I should say, that we found is, you know, Johnny Carter, Reuben's cousin, told us back in episode one.
Because the guy who did it, actually, I knew him.
What do you mean, the guy who did it? Who's the guy who did it?
There was a guy in Patterson that confessed to doing it a while back.
Really? That he pretty much thinks he knows who did it, and it was someone who confessed on their deathbed?
On his deathbed.
Right. You don't remember his name?
Yeah, I do, but I don't think I'm going to do that right now.
And that he confirmed that that was Eddie Rawls.
Just for the avoidance of doubt, when you say you heard it, do you mean you heard it was Rawls that had made that confession?
Yes.
A lot of what Steve found out came from independent investigations of the case that hadn't been seen by the public. They found, while Carter and Artis likely weren't the shooters, they may well have been there at the time of the killings. Steve confronted Artis with this information, and Artis maintains his innocence.
You have a theory, but it's been decades now. Why don't we know exactly what happened?
We don't know exactly what happened because those who are alive and still know are not willing to talk about it. You know, you heard Johnny Carter say it in the most recent episode. He asks us more than once, why do you want to know?
What is your motivation? What are you trying to accomplish?
I'd like to know what happened.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Okay. I'd like to know what happened.
True that, but we're not concerned about that.
Why?
Because it has nothing to do with us. We're innocent and we were proven otherwise. The hell who did it? We know we didn't.
There is an attitude, certainly in Patterson, of what would it achieve for it to come to light now? And as you'll have heard, my answer was, well, what about the victims' families?
It would be nice for the surviving families of the victims to know who really did it, wouldn't it?
No.
Well, they would want to know, I know that.
Maybe they do and maybe they don't. They know what they know. They lost. Their family is gone for never ever coming back. Whoever did it. That's all I'm saying.
I'm curious about what you came away thinking about Reuben, because clearly, you know, you watch the movies, you listen to the song, you know, you had knowledge of him before you even delved into this case. And I don't want to say you admired him, but you definitely knew his story. So how did you feel about him when you got through with all this?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like we met two different Reuben Carters, and I don't feel the same way about both of them. I don't like the man that Reuben Carter quite clearly was in 1966. When you hear him on the tapes speaking about what he was like as a young man and the violence and this kind of thing.
I'm being arrested for one thing or another, for assault in a bar. Or some kind of foolishness like that. Just like these young jitterbugs doing today.
You didn't do those
things? Oh, yeah, I did those things.
Oh, okay.
Of course I did those things. Yeah.
I find it pretty abhorrent. But I have a huge amount of admiration for the Reuben that left prison in 1985, because he quite clearly achieved a lot of great things. And, you know, he wasn't a rich man. He couldn't just walk away and do nothing for the rest of his life. And he picked a career that was never likely to pay him a lot of money. He picked the career of working for the wrongfully convicted, and he worked hard for the wrongfully convicted.
I go to death rows, wherever that person may be, I go there. I want to look at that person. I want to talk to that person. I was locked up in prison with criminals, with rapists, with murderers, people who have done the foulest deeds in the whole world for 20 long years. I know who belongs in prison and who does not belong in prison. You can't bullshit me, because I'm the bullshit. I am an angel. The black angel.
So, I hope that doesn't sound like I'm sitting on the fence, but it's because there are two different Reuben Carters, and it's hard to come to the same conclusion on both of them.
Steve, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
There's one final episode of the Hurricane Tapes coming up next Monday. I highly recommend it. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Ben-Yaakov and Alex Stern, with editorial direction by Katie Colinari.
Tweet us at Shai Ben-Yaakov and at Annette J.H.
We'll be back tomorrow.